Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. With us today, we have Danielle D'Agostaro. Danielle is co-founder and strategic advisor with Alchemist Accelerator. She's also a principal partner with WVV Capital. Danielle, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Christian.
So why don't we start with WVV? Would love to learn more about the fund's investment thesis.
Fantastic. So WVV is a $100 million fund created by four corporates. So we work with a large manufacturing conglomerate called Foxconn, Advocate Health, the fifth largest healthcare provider in the U.S., Northwestern Mutual, the largest life insurer and wealth manager in the U.S., and Johnson Controls, building systems operator. And so the four of them came together to create this fund and brought the team on to deploy that capital, which we've done over the last 5-6 years, deploying in areas that are interesting to them. So that could, in areas of healthcare, prop tech, sustainability, manufacturing, AI more broadly, fintech, insurtech. So quite a wide range of investments, but that actually made our day jobs pretty interesting since we got to learn new things all the time, just talking to different founders and then also new strategic areas that would come up for the corporates.
Fantastic. And as if you didn't have enough to do, you co-founded and now advising Alchemist. So what's been your role with the accelerator?
Yeah, so I was the first full-time hire brought on when the accelerator started back in 2012, seems like a long time ago. I built the back-end operations and all the investment procedures and the programming way back when. From then we've invested in over 700 startups. I left back in 2020 after spending 7 years there doing all this, getting them kind of into this new COVID age, which actually worked out to making us even more of a global accelerator. During that role, we had three funds, all corporate backed for the most part. And we were doing, or are still doing, 60K checks into each of the companies that go through the accelerator, and now have, government partnerships with like Japan, and I know they're also doing something in Memphis now. So it's continuing to grow and develop. And so since the time that I left, moving into a more strategic advisor role from being kind of the managing partner and COO, so less of the day to day, more of just advising when necessary or when needed. I advise the founders as they're getting ready to demo and to fundraise. So I really enjoy doing that with the founders, giving them the honest view of a VC, the things that they're not necessarily going to hear from a VC themselves, and helping them kind of navigate through that, because this is the first time most of them are experiencing that. And then also advising the current leadership for whatever that's worth on how I'm seeing the VC landscape and maybe how that may evolve the accelerator mindset. And also being a, being someone that can help with professional development of the team who may not have had much work experience, may not be able to get that in their day to day. I've enjoyed that as well. So just where I can be helpful and provide knowledge, given that I've moved into a full-time VC job versus just being an operator.
I'd love to unpack your perspective as a corporate VC. Before we do, if we could take a step back, what's your career progression look like from the beginning?
When I was a young person, I wanted to become a VP of marketing. That was my ambition. So nowhere near where I've ended up. I've definitely ended up in a place better than I expected. Definitely having a plan shoots you in the right direction, but then letting go of the plan opens you up to a lot more possibilities and opportunities. I grew up in Southern California. I was accepted into UC Berkeley, so that moved me up into the North Bay. From there, I got a job at Adobe, and that was my first taste into kind of corporate marketing. Realized very quickly that it wasn't for me. It just didn't move at the speed that I wanted to. And so after a year, I was looking for what's next, and then ended up getting introduced to Ravi Balani, who's the founder of the Alchemist Accelerator, and he was needing someone with more operational know-how to balance his crazy scientist, crazy genius, as we like to call it. And that balance actually worked really well. And so I, even though I had no, on my resume, there was no professional experience, operations is something that's come naturally to me. And so by referral, he took me at that and kind of let me just dive right in. And that's how I spent 7 years building the accelerator, because there was so much to do that I really didn't pop my head up until then to kind of move into full-time investing. And again, VC and startups, this is not a world that I was trying to get into. I kind of fell into it, but fell in love with it. And VC was not something that I wanted to do, because it's kind of like the dark side, when working with founders. And I'm really glad that I've opened myself up to that, because it's brought me a lot better perspective and makes me a better advisor to the startups I'm advising now.
Well, congrats on your success, being self-taught and learning a new discipline like you did. I mean, it isn't easy. I had a similar path teaching myself health tech with an accounting, finance, and investment analysis background. So Alchemist, you made re references to governments. I also happen to know that they have programs where they help corporations build their own incubators and accelerators. I have to imagine, and Alchemist is based in the Bay Area. So you're in this hot spot. You see Silicon Valley, you see the outside interest. What give us a kind of an insider's view, if you will. Why all the attention, why all the attraction for those who don't of us don't live outside San Francisco?
It's a great question, and I think it's actually a great spot that accelerators fill in the market. If you're not from the Bay Area, that assumes that you probably aren't part of the same school networks, social networks, for where those companies would often fundraise from, or get customers from, or have the same high-tech jobs from. Now, if you are, so if you are outside, jumping into an accelerator kind of plops you into the existing network that they've created, not only for investors and customers, but also other founders that have gone through and can be a resource to you. There's also usually money attached, maybe some sort of community hub or center or events. And so, and that also allows you to experience the culture. And get accustomed to that and ask questions in a safe space. So, and I do think in this market where VCs are expecting more at an earlier stage, accelerators fill a unique gap, where they're taking bets, taking bets really early on, not expecting you to have really anything other than great team, market, and potential, really. And so They're looking at some really, really early indicators for first check. And I actually just read some research this morning that shows investing in 50 companies in a fund actually gives you potential for better returns than picking very, very few select investments that knowing that like a third of them are going to fail. And it's because you're putting bigger checks into fewer companies than the fund model kind of breaks down at a certain point.
I think I read the same piece, and it's interesting, having a portfolio management background, even VC aside, you have this idea of there's going to be a certain percentage of your portfolio that you want to allocate to every single winner, and then you have to ride those winners and cut the losers short. And so this concept of spray and pay, while on the surface may seem lazy, actually, totally makes sense, and
There
has.
is definitely a filter that goes on to the spray and pray. Accelerators are looking at thousands of applications a year. The acceptance rate for a lot of them is under 5%. So there's definitely a filter. There's definitely a process. Every accelerator has one. Alchemist, we make decisions in 15 minutes. I met with someone at Skydeck. They make decisions after two interviews. Like YC, I think is still, even though they're doing over 100 companies a cohort or something, I don't know. It's still, I imagine, going to be hard to get in. Not everyone gets in, right? And so there is some selection happening. If at the end of the day you're looking at, just investable people, right? Because that's what early stage investors are going to be looking for anyways. Investable people, I think if you look at the market, what an investable person looks like these days is, have you been a successful entrepreneur before, right? All the serial entrepreneurs are stealing the limelight. Or working at a high-profile AI company. And so that does change the game for a lot of founders, which I would say, changes the whole VC conversation entirely. It's not one that I think a lot of founders should be trying to aim for. And I think changing the conversation back to how do we just make a sustainable business through customers and great product, and then VCs will find you, right? If you've got something, a VC, that's their job. They'll find you through the network. You having to go and search for VCs and let them know you exist. A lot of them, they've got some really heavy blinders on right now, which makes it really hard for founders. But I think the markets will shift again as they do.
Earlier, you made reference that VCs are expecting more. Why is that?
Because a lot of them, I think, got burned. There's been over the last 5 years, there's been so many headwinds between COVID, and then there was like a health tech bubble or just a valuation bubble in 2021. That kind of, we're seeing those funds who were able to raise capital in that kind of vintage, because of the really high valuations and everything's kind of settled. They're doing pretty poorly in terms of their portfolio construction, right? And the returns there. And because the market is changing with the liquidity options not being what they were, right? So LPs are getting stricter on their GPs to get those higher returns. And so if you need that, you make less riskier bets, which means that you're going to be, saying that you're looking for something that looks a little more sure. And so if you're, which, so then what that translates to is traction. And if you're a really early stage company just getting off the ground, how do you demonstrate that, right? And so a lot of companies are starting to bootstrap more, and you're seeing metrics around the bootstrap number increasing. I think Carta just came out with something around that too. And so it's just getting really hard. Accelerators may fill that early first check gap, but that first check needs to translate into something else, because you do need a little, especially, and I'm come from the world of B2B startup. So you need time in order to develop B2B customers. They don't just happen like consumer customers do, or B2C. And so how do you give a startup time if they can't bootstrap themselves to profitability? And so it does change the game of what VC means. It's no longer looking at, I mean, it is still looking at the horizons, but if you're taking bets on things that are already showing positive, wins, then you're not really fueling all the innovation from the bottom. So there's a bunch of different things there.
Interesting. Well, you answered my next question. What was the implication for founders? What's the implication then for incubators and accelerators? If we know, and how long do they typically run? It's 6 months.
Alchemist is 6 months. Most accelerators, I think, run 12 weeks.
Okay.
So, and they all differ. The application is there's going to be more applications. So I think they're going to have more of a pool, right? But that also means that they're going to be saying no to a lot more companies because they only have so many spots, unless they're increasing cohort sizes, which then decreases the quality potentially of how they're able to deliver their programming. So it's a whole thing. But I do think that this is a great time for accelerators to be asking themselves, how can we actually deliver on what we promised, and which originally was helping companies fundraise. The demo day, originally it started off as a demoing to customers or showcasing their product. A lot of products now, I mean, in the age of AI, it is getting easier to do, but for deep tech solutions, life sciences, there's a bunch of other categories that a demo day doesn't make sense for. So you're not really showcasing your product, you're showcasing your progress as a company in front of a group of investors. But investors don't do deals that way. So the big aha that I've learned, being in the VC seat, is that investors do deals with other investors they know and like, right? And so sitting in a room for hours watching pitches of founders that don't fit your thesis is a huge waste of time for VCs. They would much rather be on the phone, having one-on-one calls with people, catching up and hearing about a deal through the grapevine. That's how things get done. And so demo days, I don't think work, but you see a lot of accelerators still focusing on, and Alchemist does this too, focusing on that format. And so the people that are in that room are people who probably make independent decisions, right? You're talking about your angel investors. You may be talking about family office representatives who have funds themselves, right? You may be talking about emerging managers, ones who have solo GPs. That may be your new group of investors at a demo day, but it is not the big brand name funds. Their GPs are not sitting in that room, nor would you be able to get them there. Right. They're going to be sending their analysts, their lower tier associate, just people who their job is to be out in the world to network, but not necessarily to bring home an investment. So it does lead to new opportunity for an accelerator to change it up and deliver more results, honestly, to their founders that they promised to help, instead of just doing the same old song and dance.
All right, well, that was a fantastic lead-in for my next question, which I think you probably know what's going to happen. How is Alchemist going to evolve?
It's a great question. I've been advising them for a while now and giving them my insight, and we will see. I at the, unfortunately do not have the final say in all of this anymore. Fortunately, unfortunately, and so leaving it to the new powers that be. We'll see what happens. But I think all I can do is provide the insight so that it potentially can lead to new opportunities, where I do think Alchemist, being one of the older accelerators in the Bay Area, focusing exclusively on B2B, has an opportunity to be the new thought leader, in what it means to be a brand name accelerator.
Well, it sounds like they're fortunate to have your counsel, because super impressed. You can tell you know your stuff. And before we wrap up, and I'll talk a little bit more about WVV, but you mentioned Y Combinator. There are a handful of other programs in Silicon Valley. For our audience who isn't as dialed in, how should they think about all these different programs, from a comparison perspective?
Yeah, I actually have a talk on this that I gave a long time ago on how to choose the right accelerator. It's from 2018, but I think it still holds water. You definitely want to look and see what kind of company you want to build, and then from the top accelerator, top group of accelerators, which there's a list every year of which the top accelerators are. Those are the ones you really want to pick from, and then choose accordingly based off of what you think the gaps in your business are. And everyone's gaps are different. Of course, in the early stages, everyone thinks fundraising is their biggest gap. I would like to change that and say, getting customers should be your biggest gap first, and then the fundraising will come. And so, if you think of it from that perspective, then which accelerator is going to help you get more customers and teach you how to, get those customers? And so, that should be the question you ask yourself.
Oh, that's a perfect segue into financial versus corporate VCs. And so, we've been very fortunate. We've had a number of corporate investors on the podcast, and there's absolutely this theme of, why wouldn't you want a corporation on your cap table, if they can assist close deals?
I completely agree. I think corporate investors have a unique advantage if you take them on as an investor. So for a unique advantage to founders, if you take them on as an investor, it used to be that a decade ago, corporate investors were a dirty word. You did not want them on your cap table for various reasons. That has shifted significantly, though. Most of the corporate investors I know, they're not there to steal your technology and all of that. They do want to be considered at the same level that other VCs are, and they understand how big reputation is in this ecosystem, and so they want to, and they also get graded on the deals they do or the strategic value they provide to their corporate headquarters, and in many cases, unless they're a standalone fund, in which case strategic relevance may not be as important. But in any case, they want to be helpful, and if you win, they win, right? And they're not most of the time getting motivated by carry. They're not getting carry in these deals, but they are, they do want job security. They do want to have internal and external clout for certain deals they're able to get into. And honestly, a lot of corporate investors may leave and go start their own fund or go join another fund. And so they want to be doing deals that are important and meaningful and able to move the needle. And so beyond that, though, having an insider that can help you navigate through the corporate they're attached to is super valuable. It can be worth its weight in gold if you're able to talk to your corporate investor and have them help you close that deal. I will say a lot of corporate VC is still tied to whether that startup is already doing business with the corporate. And so it's, there's kind of a growing trend, I think, of standalone funds outside of the corporate, So it's less strategically relevant. However, there is still a very big group of corporate venture that they only invest if you can show that, a contract is in place or about to happen. And then the ventures team will get involved because that strategic box has already kind of been checked for them. But if it's more of a hybrid model, WVV is more of a hybrid where we were looking for strategic value to at least one of the corporates plus looking at the financial returns. And so, we were a standalone fund with each of these corporates. And it's actually a very unique model because it was four very different corporates. There was no overlap. And we served each of them equally, between the investments they made. And so we were looking across the board at things that they would care about. But because we were also looking at a sector that they may not be able to look at themselves because it's not strategic, we would bring companies into our portfolio that, if successful, would benefit the other corporates, right? Because it's a financial fund, right? So if money returned back, say a healthcare investment returned back money to the fund, yes, it's beneficial to our healthcare LP, but all the other LPs get money back too, right? Versus not being able to do or look at that deal at all because they're not a healthcare company or care to look at those. So it is actually a really unique model that we hope to carry on in another fund, getting new corporates and working with those corporates to identify, deals that are not only relevant to them, but in the world of AI, there's a lot of horizontal applications to all corporates and not
Sure.
just one. And we have a unique team between operator, early stage investor, and AI kind of expertise. Our MD has a PhD in AI, and so we're analyzing it from a completely different kind of spec than a traditional kind of corporate venture arm. And but in any way, I still think corporate venture could be valuable. You just need to spend longer with them because most of the time it takes longer for them to make a decision.
Sure. And what was the genesis behind WVV? And
Great question. So it predates me. It predates actually, honestly, all of us from the fund. But the four corporates are all based in Milwaukee, or were at the time of its founding. And they wanted to come together to show that they were invested in the Milwaukee ecosystem and developing out kind of that Midwest area. And so kind of cover Chicago and Milwaukee. But we don't invest just in that locale. We invest across the US. The idea was that for every investment we made into a company in those locations, that would potentially bring outside venture money to those areas, which means more jobs, more people. So it's kind of funneling money into those, the ecosystems. And we did that. We do have a track record for deploying capital into financially driven companies that also got outside investment from top-tier investors that grew companies to 100 plus people. So if you do pick winners, it shows no matter where they, live, and work
sure.
out of, it does bring money back if chosen well. 'Cause there's honestly in a lot of outside of the Bay Area and New York, these are diamonds in the rough. You're finding everywhere in between, but if you find them, it's a huge economic boon.
You mentioned that you're on a current fund right now. Is how do you find that the corporate interest lies? Is it at the corporation itself, or is it their VC arms that'll treat it like a fund of funds?
It depends. This WVV was actually created by the CEOs of each of the corporates. So because they did it as an economic development model, then it was, once that was agreed to at the highest level, then they brought it down to either their mostly their corporate venture arms to kind of run because that's what they understood. In the same way, if we found new corporates, we would probably want it to be kind of at the higher level to show alignment, or of course at the corporate venture level where they can see the value of complementing what they're already doing, by adding a team that's maybe outside of their normal day to day.
Got it. Really exciting stuff. I wish we had more time. Close to wrapping up. One of my favorite go-to questions is look back. And so if you had an opportunity to go back, have a conversation with your younger self, you pick the age, what would you share?
That it's all going to be fine. It's all going to work out. I definitely remember having this moment of crises that I feel like a lot of young people have where they think that they've kind of mapped out everything and things aren't going exactly as planned. But every time I talk to a young person who I know is going to go through it or is going through it, I just tell them it's all going to be okay. It's all, as long as you keep an open mind and just keep pushing along and it's all going to work out. So I tell my younger self the same.
I think it's great advice. The engineer in me wants to unpack the root of it. And I kind of honed in on just the unknown and what's going to happen. So my part of my remedy has been telling myself that too, but also a little bit of faith. It's like, look, if there's a higher being here, I'm willing to bet they've got my back. And even if I don't know what's around the corner, all will be well.
Yeah, and I also think this is a bit of just having confidence and taking a bet on yourself, on knowing your ability, and the people you draw around you, and knowing that it depending on I do think regardless of what industry you're in, if you surround yourself with people who are thinking bigger. I do think that that just lends itself to new opportunities, in ways that you never imagined. And that's what happened to me. But you have to kind of put yourself out there. You can't be expecting all of this to happen, from behind a computer screen or in a bubble. You kind of have to be out into the world and kind of show off your skill set, and somebody's going to acknowledge that and hopefully help you develop that.
I think that's absolute brilliant advice. I forget. I think her name is, oh, I don't even know the author's name who wrote The Secret.
Oh, The Secret. I've read that. Yeah.
I, for better or for worse, I think she left a generation of readers with this idea that they can literally just sit there and things will come. Where, and maybe she didn't say that. That was just the impression I got. But to your point, that maybe you can. There's a law of attraction, but it starts with some action and getting put there to get the ball rolling is a great first step.
Yeah. There's actually a quote in Eat, Pray, Love. That Julia Roberts says about someone praying to God that they win the lottery, and then God responds, "Well, you have to buy a ticket first in order to win it." And so that quote has always stuck with me. Is you have to take the first step, and good things will come if you put good back out into the universe.
I love it. Last question before we wrap up. Anyone in your personal or professional network that you'd love to give a shout out to because they've had a meaningful impact?
Yeah, I'll shout out to Ravi Balani.
All right, Rob.
He's the founder of the Alchemist Accelerator. Took me under his wing, and kind of showed me all the ropes of investing, and negotiation and customers, and kind of helped me develop into the professional that I am today. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, shout out to Ravi. Obviously, has had a meaningful impact because super impressed with what I've heard today. Danielle, if there are any members of our audience who'd like to get a hold of you or learn more about Alchemist or WVV, how can they find you?
LinkedIn, please. I will I'll connect you that way, and we can always set up time from there.
Awesome. Again, for our members' benefit, Danielle D'Agostaro, co-founder, strategic advisor at Alchemist Accelerator, also a partner with WVV Capital. Danielle, thank you again for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Christian.
My pleasure. And again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder, CEO of Finstrat Management. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. Take care. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. If you'd like to know more, go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.